The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Susan Dellinger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Oprah Magazine, March 2018, Volume 20, Number 3. This is the second of five installments of the March issue. Oprah shares this month's cover with Mindy Kaling and Reese Witherspoon. The three of them stand out in their black and white dresses against the rose beige background. The big headline is, where do we go from here? What we know for sure, things between men and women will never be the same. The big black Oprah O sits on a white rectangle in the upper left-hand corner. To start off this second installment, let's listen to The World According to Gail from the Live Your Best Life section of the magazine. And in the upper left-hand corner of the page, we have a scene from the TV show Atlanta with Brian Tyler Henry and Donald Glover standing, staring kind of glumly. More than a year after its season one finale, FX's acclaimed comedy Atlanta, about a down-on-his-luck musician trying to find his way, finally returns March 1st. My first reaction, Gail says, yay! My second? Why the wait? According to Donald Glover, the show's Emmy-winning writer and star, it's because he was busy fulfilling a dream, acting in an upcoming Star Wars film. I can't be annoyed with him for that, but please, no delays before season three. Over to the right, we have Gail and a 10-year-old girl named Abby Green in a series of snapshots that look like they were taken in a photo booth. Shop is this headline. I still cringe, Gail says, when I think about my first pair of glasses, turquoise cat-eye frames my mom bought without consulting me first. If only Pair Eyewear had been around when I was in the fourth grade. The children's eyewear company wants glasses to give kids confidence and has come up with a fun twist. The frames have a magnetized front so you can attach different colors and patterns. Hey, if they're cool enough for Anna, my modeling partner, and managing editor Abby Green's 10-year-old daughter, they're cool enough for me. They start at $115 and go to PairEyewear.com. Anna and Gail are modeling four different variations of these glasses, everything from sort of turquoise or red fringed or not fringed, but rimmed, and then black and white stripes, and then some pretty cool bright colors as well. Below that, under watch, we have a picture of Jennifer Lawrence from the film Red Sparrow. Meet Dominika Ergorova, a Russian ballerina turned sparrow, sparrow in quotes, also known as government spy. When an accident derails her career, Ergorova, played by Jennifer Lawrence, transforms her mind and body into a weapon, and the line between loyal comrade and dangerous renegade starts to blur. While watching Red Sparrow, I kept wondering whose side she was really on. I bet that on March 2nd, film audiences everywhere will be doing the same. Below that, we have a big headline that says, Rock Out. Pink climbed to the pop charts in 2001 as a 20-year-old with What Else? Hot Pink Hair, singing songs about starting the party. Now she's a 30-something mom of two, singing about marital highs and lows. The Grammy winner takes her mature sound on the road this month with a new tour, Beautiful Trauma, named after her seventh album. I've never seen Pink perform live, but when I catch her New York show, I hope she'll do some of her new aerial acrobatic moves while singing my current favorite, Whatever You Want. And there's a picture here of Pink. It appears as if she's been standing or jumping, and she's wearing shiny black leggings and a black leotard top, and there is some, it looks as if she's holding up a man straight above her, and with they're grabbing each other's wrists. But I guess that's just a freeze frame of one of their aerial acrobatics. And finally on this page, under Go, it doesn't take a Mean Girl to turn Mean Girls into a Broadway musical. Tina Fey wrote the 2004 film's memorable screenplay, and now she's brought her comedic writing chops to the highly anticipated stage adaptation, which the previews March 12th. Tina recently told me fans can expect to see the film's DNA infused with dancing and plenty of high notes. Even Regina George would agree that sounds pretty fetch. We'll move now to the Let's Eat section of the magazine, and for oodles of noodles, our singular sensation this month is pasta. A delicious celebration of one standout ingredient. This month, pasta, no matter what shape it takes, it never disappoints. And the picture for the first page of this section has linguine and shells and nests and penne and twists arranged in sort of a geometric form with some grated Parmesan cheese dusted all over this uncooked pasta. Now we turn the page. Why we love it. Tender, chewy, incomparably satisfying. It's no wonder pasta comforts both body and soul. But if you think it's just a dinner, wrap your noodle around this. Pasta has a place in all your meals. Add protein, like bacon and egg, and you've got a fuel-filled breakfast. Throw in lots of bright produce and call it lunch. Any leftover? That's why God made midnight snacks. Smooth sauces like pesto and Alfredo cling better to twisty shapes, and thick-walled tubular pastas like penne and rigatoni can handle the heft of chunky veggie or meat sauces. You can freeze portions of cooked pasta. Al dente is best to prevent post-thaw mushiness for quick weekday lunches or dinners. Gummy bears are fine. Gummy pasta is not. To avoid it, wait until your water has reached a full rolling boil before adding noodles. And now for maximum flavor, always salt your pasta water, at least 1 tablespoon per pound of pasta. Let's get to the first recipe, kale Caesar pasta salad. This makes 6 servings. It takes an active time of 20 minutes and a total time of 30 minutes. Here are the ingredients. 1 pound of bow tie pasta, 6 tablespoons of mayonnaise, 1/3 cup grated Parmesan, 3 tablespoons of lemon juice, 1 tablespoon of Dijon mustard, 1 tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil, 1 garlic clove crushed, 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt, 1/2 teaspoon of ground black pepper, 1 large bunch of kale, stemmed and chopped, 8 medium radishes, quartered. And now, here are the directions. Cook the pasta according to package directions. Meanwhile, in a large bowl, whisk together mayonnaise, Parmesan, lemon juice, mustard, oil, garlic, salt, and pepper. Add kale and toss to combine. Once pasta is cooked, strain, immediately add to kale mixture and toss. Let cool slightly, stir in radishes, and serve. Try this in a sidebar note. Ward off 3 p.m. hunger pangs by including protein like grilled chicken or sautéed shrimp in your pasta salad. Or try Banza's chickpea-based noodles, eatbanza.com. which offer 14 grams per serving, nearly half as much as a 4-ounce steak. And now, bacon and egg breakfast pasta. This makes 4 servings for a total time of 20 minutes. Here are the ingredients. 12 ounces of spaghetti, 1 bunch of Swiss chard stemmed and chopped, 8 slices of thick-cut bacon, 1 teaspoon of extra virgin olive oil, 4 large eggs, 1/2 cup of grated Parmesan, plus more for sprinkling, 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt, plus more for seasoning, and 1/4 teaspoon of ground black pepper, plus more for seasoning. Cook spaghetti according to package directions, adding chard during the last 3 minutes. Reserve a half a cup of cooking water, drain the pasta and chard, then return to pot. Meanwhile, in a large non-stick skillet over medium heat, cook the bacon until crisp, about 6 to 8 minutes. Transfer to a paper towel-lined plate. Break into pieces when it's cool. Wipe out the skillet and heat oil over medium. Crack eggs into skillet and cook to desired doneness, 3 to 4 minutes for runny yolks. Finally, toss pasta and chard with reserved pasta water, Parmesan, salt, and pepper. Fold in bacon. Divide among 4 bowls and top each with an egg. Season to taste with salt and pepper and sprinkle with additional Parmesan if desired. Let's move from food now to fashion. And in the Love That section of the magazine, the very first page is a stunning trench coat. This month is O Magazine's Spring Style Blowout. The fab find shown here is a soft beige synthetic suede, or as some of us might still call it, ultra suede, trench coat. This coat of honor, as the title reads, has the traditional trench coat features of the generously wide, notched collar and straps on the shoulders, and a 2-inch wide belt out of that same luscious synthetic suede fabric, which is casually looped over once. This coat, though, is an unbuttoned wrap coat. The slender sleeves don't have a strap or tab to tighten them at the wrist. Instead, they end in a 1.5-inch top stitch hem with a slit at the seam. Now, this is just a trivia aside from me, your reader, that I found while I was Googling trench coats to help with describing the tailoring of this one. And this is from a 2015 article in Smithsonian Magazine. The trench coat wasn't exactly invented for use during the war that gave it its name, a war spent mired in muddy, bloody trenches across Europe. But it was during the First World War that this now iconic garment took the shape that we recognize today, a form that remains startlingly current despite being more than 100 years old. And now let's finish reading the description here in O Magazine. Fact, trenches are timeless, and this day-to-night head-turner is that and then some. The sleek, knee-length design with a one-button closure puts a modern spin on the classic. And I wonder if the button is underneath the belt because you can't see it. Made of softer than soft vegan suede, it comes in a single, universally flattering oatmeal shade that took months of tweaking to perfect. And trust us, it was well worth the wait. Our label by TheReset.com. This is $295. And when we turn the page, we have the very first page of O's Spring Fashion Lookbook. Adam says, it's time to say bye-bye to winter chills and welcome fabulous spring fashion. Creative director Adam Glassman has handpicked the season's standouts to get you off to a fresh start. And this first page is full of pinks, from soft blush pinks to kind of that baby pink to almost a mauve, and with a little bit of beige sprinkled in, a little bit of green, a little bit of kind of an olive green, and some hot pink shoes. But let's get to the details. The first model is attired in a below-the-knee, sort of trench coat-inspired raincoat, which has super wide sleeves that have been rolled up. The top that she's wearing over some mauve crop pants is a diagonal, about 1.5-inch striped top that the stripes are shades of mauve and pink, kind of going almost to a bronze, and then shades of yellow, from a golden yellow to kind of a straw yellow. And she's wearing some flat, pale mauve slip-on open-toed shoes. They're almost like those Adidas shower shoes that were so popular and are making a comeback. Just that wide 2.5-inch band that goes across the top of the toes and the arch of the foot. And let's look at these items individually. The coat is from Elizabeth and James. The top is from Nikki Chasen. The jeans are J Brand. And the slides are from Lacoste. Now, the next outfit is a blush pink raglan sleeve, wide-necked, ribbed sweater over a drab olive skirt that has two super deep layers of ruffles and a tie belt out of the same fabric with a real long tie. And it's being worn with a pair of very sparkly metallic pink sandals with a little gold heel, skinny straps around the ankles, and just a slender strap that goes over the toes that are embellished with some sparkly, almost flower-like ornaments on the toes. The sweater is from Design History. The skirt is from Vince Camuto. And the sandals are from Francis Valentine. And our third model is wearing some pale kind of baby pink rolled hemmed jeans. It's a jeans cut pant, but the hem's been rolled up a couple of times, and it's being worn with some hot pink suede pumps with a super tall stiletto heel. And the top is a deep kind of wine and black sequined camisole. That top is from One State. The rolled up chinos are from Talbots, and the pumps are SJP by Sarah Jessica Barker. We'll look at a couple of more pages of Love That and O's Spring Fashion Lookbook in this installment, and then we'll look at the other pages in later installments for March. So we have a couple of different collections that are based on runway looks from spring 2018. The first one is called Retro Revamp, and the model is shown wearing a black and white kind of lacy sheer dress over a white camisole and black leggings. It's topped with a gray and lavender plaid coat, and that is from Miu Miu Spring 2018. Add a little quirkiness to your look with 60s style silhouettes, slick textures, and punchy prints that can be mixed and matched. Keep the whimsy from veering into wacky by sticking to a neutral and feminine palette. And most of what's shown here is in black and white or gray or blue or tan. Right off the bat, we have a pair of oversized cat-eye black specked sunglasses from Jimmy Choo for $495. Below that, we have a slick rain coat. It falls just at the top of the hips. It's a shiny powder blue with great big patch pockets. It's $129 from Land's End. Then we have a dress. Beside that, it's a short sleeve, almost shirt waist looking kind of dress in a black and white little geometric pattern. And the hem is about a 12-inch deep flounce that's been cut on the bias. This is from Shoshana, and it's $422. Beside that, we have some dangling earrings that are almost like little leather cut tassels in green and blue and deep lavender. They're $250 from Kendra Scott. We have a circle bag. The top is a black and white checkerboard pattern, and the piping and the handle, the strap, are in white. That's $209 from ClaireV.com. Now we have a blazer that is in a tan and black plaid on a white background. It's a two-button blazer with patch pockets and a notched collar. It's $695 from Smith. And then we have a skirt for $109 from Talbot. It's just a slender above-the-knee skirt with no band. And it has horizontal bands of lace in kind of a light blue, a black, and a white. And those, each band of lace is about 2 inches wide. And then finally, we have a sandal for $60 from callitspring.com. And it looks like a little satiny blue and white pinstripe, like an Oxford cloth shirt, but a little bit shinier finish. And it just sort of wraps over the toe and has some little pearl buttons on it and sort of a nude color strap that wraps around the ankle. And that's also the little stiletto heel is in that nude leather. The next item, the next look is plain and fancy. Pair what's everyday with what's extra. Cargo pants with a sequin top. A sweatshirt accented by eyelet trim, a lacy dress and sneakers. This best of both worlds juxtaposition feels unexpected and new. Most of the colors in this selection are sort of peach and beige and gray, except for the cargo pants, which are a drab olive, and then the white and yellow sort of frilly dress. So let's look at these items one by one. We have a sweatshirt here in gray, and it has this 4-inch white eyelet ruffle that's sewn sort of underneath the hem so that it has this layered look. And the sleeves of this sweatshirt have been cut off just below the elbow and hemmed. That's $68 from Banana Republic. Then there's a halter top in this shimmery kind of blush pink fabric with few sparkles on it. It's from One State and it's $89. And in that same sort of color family, that sort of blushy pink beige, we have a skirt from Eloquy for $90. This probably hits about at the knee, and it's horizontal row after row of fringe. Below that, we have an anorak in sort of a peachy color, but this is a short anorak with a drawstring really at the waistline, so it doesn't go a bit below the waistline, and it has big white patch pockets that sit just above the waistline. It's $298 from Cole Haan. Now, we have some sneakers from Ash for $185, which are that dark blush pink lace or eyelet on the top of the sneaker with elastic bands that zigzag across the top. And then you have sort of white and that blush pink in the sole with almost like a zigzag pattern to give you a real accent. We have just a couple of more items in this plain and fancy. One is kind of a drab olive, very washed looking cargo pants, lots of droopy pockets, etc. They are from johnnywas.com and they're $328. Then we have this dress in white with those knife pleats, almost the accordion pleats. It's a sheer white fabric with fluttery sleeves, a yellow floral pattern, kind of a pale yellow floral pattern on the skirt and the bodice. And then there's a yellow detail at the jewel neckline and across the waist. That dress is from Kobe Halperin, and it's $598. And to finish this all off, we have a brooch from Simply Vera Wang for $26 at Kohl's. And it looks like a beetle, and it looks like it's done in diamonds, sort of that baguette shape. But obviously, this is just a diamond look. Now we have some watch designs across the bottom of the page. Five of them, and they're all in that sort of stainless steel, polished or satin, and from bright to the real dark, dark gray. Take a break from your phone and tell time the old-fashioned way using these Go With Everything Silver wristwatches. From Movado.com for $395, we have one that has a solid black band, a solid face, and just black hands. And it is round, and it's sort of a satin look. The next one from Citizens, $195, and it's got a decidedly kind of 1930s, 1940s look to it. The face is square with almost a hint of an Art Deco design on the bezel and in the watch band itself. Just single little notches for the hours. The next watch is from Chanel. It's $4,300. And the band is like a woven fabric design, almost like a burlap, something really that open and woven, but in a metallic, some type of metal. The rectangular face of the Chanel watch is black, and the bezel, the rectangular bezel, has a couple of sort of layers or in its design, and each of the four corners is sort of truncated a little bit. Our next watch is from DavidYurman.com, and it's $1,850, and it has this chain bracelet, super shiny, polished. The square face of the watch is sort of a pillow square. It billows out a little bit instead of just being perfectly lined up. But your first impression is that it's a square, and it has Roman numerals for noon, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 9 o'clock. And then finally, from Bulova at $895, we have a leather, it's almost like a snakeskin or scale pattern leather band in a metallic finish. The round watch face has small Roman numerals and a polished stainless steel, but the watch face itself is a little bit darker. And then the bezel has almost a little rope pattern all the way around the outside. Now we have just a couple of more spring fashion items, and we'll move into some other articles. This page is called Peppy Prints, and this is a trend alert. We foresee a pattern, statement makers rising to the top of your most wanted list. And the first item here is Rainbow Brights, and the first dress is $650 from Millie.com. It's a 60s-inspired stripe with fun geometric patterns in primary colors, and all of the stripes just sort of go from being stripes to taking angles and creating squares, but you've got all these layers of stripes. So it has kind of a camisole top, and then the drop waist of the skirt has those knife pleats. So it's in greens and reds and light blues and navies and a little bit of brown and yellow, very 1960s looking. Next, we have a really shiny shirt from Alice Plus Olivia by Stacy Binday, and it's $375. First glance, the color that sticks out the most is really kind of the pink. It's vertical stripes, pink and red and darker pink, kind of a gray, a little bit of green, deep cuffs with three buttons, a classic shirt. And then below that, we have a skirt from Zara.com for $90. And it's a slender skirt with no waistband, probably falls below the knee. The vertical stripes are kind of a seafoam green, a pink, a light blue, black, lavender, kind of a bright yellow that sticks out. But all of this is done in sequins. And finally, under Rainbow Brights, we have a bag from LeflerRandall.com for $295. It's white leather, which means it's kind of off-white. The bottom of the bag is straight, but the top is completely semicircular, and then it has this bright zigzag rainbow pattern that follows that circle, and the zip goes from obviously one side up to the top and down to the other side, and it has a super long leather fringe tassel on it and a long white strap. And one of the next looks on this page is vintage floral. And if you're old enough to remember the 60s, these floral patterns are very typical of the 60s. Dark navy blue or black background with pinks and blues, a lot of kind of powder, what we called powder blue back at the time, and some really true greens. First off, we have a dress from LHD for $5.95, and it has a plain bodice with a scoop neck, and it buttons, and it has a gathered skirt, and it has little puffed sleeves. And that's navy blue with green and teal and pink and lavender and purple flowers on it. Next, we have a blouse, navy blue background, lavender, white, pale blue, and then, of course, green for the florals in kind of a geometric floral print. The top is $225 from TuckerNYC.com. We have some drop emerald look earrings from Elizabeth Cole. They have the teardrop on the bottom that dangles from a big white daisy, and they're $168 at ShopBop. Have a great big fat soled sneaker here in pink floral pattern with little orange flowers sprinkled among the big pink ones. A little bit of green patent leather accent at the back of the shoe and pink at the front of the shoe, and it's just your standard lace up. It's $278 from Tory Sport. We have another skirt here from Talbots. It's that same navy blue background with the powder blue, the lavender, the pink, and white flowers with, of course, the green foliage. That's $69.50 at Talbots. To finish off this vintage floral, we have a pocketbook that is an oversized graphic design of a pink flower with two different shades of yellow in the center and a little black dot in the very center of that. And all these pink flowers are on an orange background. The top of this purse, which is $95 from marymecco.com, the top of this purse looks like an old-fashioned change purse with that you clasps together with the little metal balls, and you have to sort of twist it between your fingers to open it. And it has a long, skinny, sort of half-inch strap. Next up, we have polka dots from ASOS.com. We have a $53 dress, which has a halter top, ruffles around the neckline, ruffles at the ampere waistline, and then lots of layers of ruffles running kind of diagonally across the skirt, and that's white with navy blue or black. It's a little hard to tell. Polka dots. We have a pair of cropped pants from Michael Kors for $140, and they're navy blue with white polka dots, and they're pretty wide-legged. Then we have some sneakers from Aldo at $65. They are white with big black polka dots on them, and a little bit of kind of lime green in the trim and accents in the eyelets where the white laces lace up, and then at the back of the shoe. And then we have from Diane von Furstenberg a $528 pocketbook, which is just a nice little trim, plain, sort of envelope style bag, and it has horizontal stripes of different black and white polka dots. Some black on white, white on black, and varying sizes, and a mid-tan handle. And then finally, under polka dots, for $410 from Self Portrait, we have a top that has one shoulder, long sleeves, a ruffle that goes at the top of the sleeve that is off the shoulder, and then it goes diagonally across the front of the bodice, and it has a peplum. Now, this is a white top with red polka dots. Let's move now to the special features section of the magazine, and we'll continue the article that we started in the first installment. Under the Year of Big Questions, where do we go from here? In case you haven't heard, we've got a problem on our hands. Hands, in fact, are a major part of the problem. But in just a few months, we've made astonishing progress, sharing powerful stories, toppling powerful pervs. And now it's time to channel our outrage at the sexual harassment pandemic and figure out a righteous way forward. In the first installment, we read contributions and comments from people such as Margaret Atwood, Gloria Steinem, and Phoebe Robinson of Two Dope Queens. So across the bottom of one of the pages, two of the pages, in fact, we have some commentary. Yuck Fest, it's called. How Pop Culture Normalized the Debasement of Women. And the first one, we show a family sitting around a TV set in about the 1950s, a mom and dad and two young children. Boob tube. Miss America pageant establishes wholesome annual ritual of fully clothed families gathering to ogle and appraise nearly naked ladies. Next we have what appears to be a New Yorker cartoon with an older man on one side of a desk and a young woman on the other side of a desk. And he's saying, young woman, do you realize my time is worth $30 a minute? How droll. Mid-century New Yorker cartoon humor. Adam's family hijinks, madcap robots, sexual assault in the workplace. The next item, handy. We see a man sitting in an airport lounge reading a Playboy. Come for the articles, stay for the porn. The next item is a picture of I Dream of Jeannie, bottle service. Midriff-bearing, miniaturizable Bimbette lives to please her master. They'd never pull this on Jambi. Next, we have a picture of a very young Bill Cosby, stand-up guy. Bill Cosby talks up drugging women's drinks in his Spanish Fly routine. Getting a little closer to our current time, we have a picture of a Hooters waitress, hands full of burgers and fries. BLTNA. What goes great with curly fries? Double D servers, of course. And then finally, we have a slender runway model modeling lingerie. Grin and bear it. The Victoria's Secret fashion show. Approximately 20 square inches of fabric covering 20 square feet of skin. On network television. The cheeks. We have a poem here from Alice Walker from A Branch, Sexual Assault in the Present Time. Sisters, daughters, cousins, whatever you are to the rest of Earth's family, there is no future for our daughters or our sons if we do not insist on and forge our solidarity by speaking up. To have the courage to share our wounds and begin to rise and heal together. Woman's enslavement, not only within memory, is the root. What is happening to you, to us, now is a branch. Now we have a contribution from Mary Carr, memoirist and poet, and it's called In Her Shoes. If a nice, clueless male can't marshal empathy for the forms of sexual humiliation women have endured for eons, he should close his eyes and envision the power differential in the crudest physical terms. Beginning at age 12, say, this guy can't walk down the street without multiple leering wrestler types loudly discussing his ass, mocking him, threatening him with bodily harm if he's unresponsive. When he's grown and his boss corners him and shoves a tongue down his throat, the man is shocked to hear a colleague say, "Oh, lighten up, it's a party." He gets used to being pawed at and tolerating jokes about what a great blowjob he could probably give. This goes on for decades, happens dozens of times, and on exactly zero occasions does a single one of these bullies face even an informal reprimand, much less any real consequence. But he observes that for those who report abusive behavior, there are big consequences. Jobs are lost, classes dropped, careers sidelined. "What's the big deal?" a male friend recently asked me about a guy forcing a kiss or copping a feel. "What does it cost you?" I said, "Great, let's film some hulking creature grabbing your Johnson and laughing about it. You're humiliated and ashamed, but you keep your mouth shut. And then the hulking creature is elected president." My friend's mouth made a tight, dry little O. Our next contribution is from Barbara Brown Taylor, Episcopal priest and author of most recently, Learning to Walk in the Dark. The work before us is to take care that our exhilaration doesn't turn into hyperventilation. If this movement is to have a lasting effect, we need to do more than call out our abusers. We need to heal ourselves, and the straightest road to healing is forgiveness. That doesn't mean lying down and saying, "Go ahead, run over me again." It's not about giving a pass to those who wronged you. It's about letting go of hatred. People who do nothing but dam and pound and pummel can turn to stone, like hot lava that cools into a sharp rock. When we forgive, we free ourselves from bitterness, and we grant the person who wronged us the chance to make things right. Our next contribution is from Mary Beard, whose book Women in Power, A Manifesto, traces the roots of misogyny to the Greek and Roman empires. In England, some women have taken it upon themselves when, say, groped on a crowded train, to grab the offending appendage, lift it, and loudly ask, "Whose hand is this?" In general, we might use the power of humor to ridicule more effectively. Meantime, so long as no criminal line has been crossed, I would give perpetrators an amnesty, on condition of never again. And I would shift our gaze from celebrity harassment to the cases of, quote, ordinary women. We are going to make progress only if we all pull together, from the casting couch to the factory floor. And to finish this off, we have an imaginary game called the claim game. What really happens in a sexual harassment case? Let's follow the entirely fictional story of one Jane Doe. And this looks a little bit like a game board, say Candyland or something else, where you go from one spot to another. So in the first spot, for 8 months, Jane, a sales rep at Acme Corp, has been getting unwanted neck rubs and sexual propositions from her colleague, Dick, even though she's repeatedly asked him to stop. A lawyer friend says, "Document it." Jane gets a notebook for dates and other details. In the second spot, Jane checks her employee manual for sexual harassment reporting procedure, then tells HR. Now, in a sidebar, Acme has more than 15 employees, so Jane is protected by Title VIII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the federal law that makes sexual harassment illegal. For workers at mom and pop shops, legal protection varies by state. Also, good call on pursuing the proper channels, says Laura Noble, an employment lawyer in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. If Jane failed to precisely follow reporting procedures and later tried to file a claim, Acme could be off the hook. Now we're at step three. Dick gets a note in his file and attends a mandatory harassment seminar. Step 4. Jane gets a new office. It's a broom closet. Her boss takes away her top clients and relegates Jane to pencil pushing. This can't be legal, she thinks. And here's the note. It isn't, says Washington, D.C. employment lawyer Alexis Roniker. Quote, demotion is retaliation, which is against the law, end of quote. Step 5. Jane calls an attorney. And here's the note. Jane hasn't signed a binding arbitration agreement. If she had, she couldn't publicly file a claim, and a private arbitrator would decide her case. Noble says, quote, this can be a clause in onboarding paperwork, and people sign it without realizing it, end of quote. Arbitrators may have a pro-employer bias, she adds, because they're often hired by the big law firms that defend companies, and their decisions can't be appealed. Step 6. The lawyer reviews Jane's evidence to determine whether she has a case. That is, 1. She was harassed because of her sex. 2. It was unwelcome. 3. It was so, quote, severe or pervasive, end of quote, that it could affect a, quote, reasonable person's, end of quote, working conditions. And 4. Acme knew about it and failed to act appropriately. Here's a side note, says Roniker. It's very difficult for plaintiffs to meet this standard. Step 7. Jane's lawyer notifies Acme that she plans to file a claim. Step 8. Acme offers a $50,000 settlement. As part of the terms, Jane would have to leave the company and sign a non-disclosure agreement stating that she can say nothing about the case except, quote, the matter was resolved, end of quote. If she breached confidentiality, she'd have to pay back the $50,000. A gag order? Jane's not playing ball. She has savings, so she decides to go to court. And here's a side note. Roniker says most of her cases end in settlement. Quote, if a client has enough to build a lawsuit, she's been through horrible stuff and wants this to be over. End of quote. Step 9. Jane files with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, as required by federal law. After an investigation, the EEOC sends her a, quote, right to sue, end of quote, letter. Jane has 90 days to file her lawsuit. And here's a side note. This must happen within 180 days of the most recent episode of harassment or retaliation. Step 10 of 11. A federal judge makes a summary judgment to determine whether a reasonable jury could believe Dick's behavior was harassment. Jane's judge is a woman who once clerked for a guy like Dick. She says the case can go to trial. Here's the side note. Jane has beaten the odds. As of 2016, 71% of federal judges were men. Roniker says, quote, and often it's been decades since they were anyone's employee, so their idea of reasonable can differ greatly from yours or mine, end of quote. And our final step, step 11, Jane has her day in court. A jury finds in her favor. She's awarded $150,000. What she really wants is an apology. Good luck with that, Jane. And our final note. Only 6% of federal workplace discrimination suits go to trial, and only 2% end in victory for the plaintiff, according to research by the American Bar Foundation. So, Jane is the winner. And in parentheses, sort of. And now we have a dialogue with Mindy Kaling, Reese Witherspoon, and Oprah. It's about time. Oprah talks with the two about sexism on screen and off and carving a pathway to parity. It would be tough to pick two more blue-chip Hollywood names than Reese Witherspoon, star and producer of most recently the deliciously sinister, labyrinthine HBO series Big Little Lies, and Mindy Kaling, whose six-season comedy, The Mindy Project, was the first TV show created by an Indian American. Both wield witchy magic alongside Oprah in the upcoming A Wrinkle in Time, the new film adaptation of the 1962 futuristic fantasy novel directed by another boundary smasher, Ava DuVernay. When the O of O sat down with these two fearless change makers, they immediately started discussing how far women have come and where we must go next. Oprah, I'm so excited to have a conversation with such beautiful, innovative, powerful women, my A Wrinkle in Time co-stars. Reese Witherspoon, thank you for having us. Sitting around and talking is our favorite thing to do. Mindy Kaling, and it's nice not to be in harnesses and wigs. Oprah, making the movie felt like being part of a trailblazing, pioneering adventure with Ava as the first African-American woman to direct a $100 million budget film. I hope the message of light it brings will resonate with people. I think a lot about the line in the movie, "The darkness is spreading so fast these days." Reese, oh my gosh, it was incredible, that speech. Oprah, the only thing faster than light is darkness. It's so interesting that Madeline Lingle knew that so many years ago, because it really fits the age we're living in now. What was your reaction when you first started to see the wave of women confronting their harassers and abusers? Reese, initially it was really shocking. When I heard the first Harvey Weinstein story, I was in L.A., Oprah, you said that you and several other actresses you knew were having trouble sleeping because it was so hard listening to these accounts. I said, gee, that sounds like you're having some symptoms of PTSD, and your eyes started to water. Reese, yeah, I remember that. All those things I thought I had dealt with a long time ago, I hadn't dealt with. A lot of these women with stories are my very dear friends, like Salma Hayek and Gwyneth Paltrow. These are some of my closest friends and colleagues, and I had known their experiences were difficult, but I'd never understood the depth of the harassment. I was just floored, and then I realized, this is the moment to tell what happened to me when I was young. This is the moment where healing begins. Oprah, then at a conference, you did tell your story about being assaulted by a director when you were just 16, and immediately afterward, another actress in the room stood up and divulged something. I've seen this happen over and over and over again, that the moment you release the thing that has held you in chains or that has made you feel shamed or disappointed in yourself, there's always, always another person saying, me too. Reese, the understanding was that remaining silent was the condition of our employment. Do you want to work? Do you want to get ahead? Then you don't talk. But the rules have changed. And with Time's Up, we're making sure they're changing for everyone by providing legal and financial support to women in any workplace who have been harassed or are ready to speak up about it. Oprah, I didn't grow up in the movie industry, but in the television business, I was so sexually harassed. It was absolutely implicitly understood that if I said a word about it, I would have been out of television. Reese, whistleblowers were not welcome, and you wanted one of the very rare leading actress positions. You towed the line. Oprah, Mindy, what have you experienced or witnessed in terms of harassment in Hollywood? Mindy, I've been lucky enough to never have been the recipient of the kind of overt sexual menacing harassment that has been in all the headlines, but I'm empowered as a show creator and writer in a way that I'm not as an actress. Actresses I've worked with suffer far more because of the vulnerable nature of their job. Oprah, we're creating new rules as we evolve. Do you think this moment will change the culture of toxic masculinity in the workplace? Reese, I think it just turned the lights on. And yeah, I do think things are going to change. There are a lot of really good men in the world, but I do think it's incumbent on women in leadership to rewrite the rules. We have to get together as groups of women, which is what I've been doing with a lot of actresses. It's been incredibly illuminating. Women in positions of power need to help people understand what the new normal is. You tell people how you want them to treat you. Mindy. The key is getting more women into these positions of power. Having women in charge is the easiest way to make change, assuming they get to be in charge. The harder way is confronting and reporting harassment in the workplace, which is so much more challenging because it requires going out on a limb. So many women want to simply fly under the radar and not seem like a troublemaker or a drama queen. Oprah. In A Wrinkle in Time, we get the message that complacency leads people to abandon independent thought. Do you feel like our culture is complacent right now? Reese, I think our culture is more alive and vibrant than it's ever been. We're waking ideas that have been dormant for a long time, and it's terrifying and thrilling. Social media has opened up a conversation that was not possible about 10 years ago. Women are talking about things they've never spoken about, and they're actually being heard. Mindy, people who were not necessarily speaking their minds before are feeling that they have to. You used to think, I'm an actress, I'm a writer, I don't necessarily want to get involved. Yet now I feel that being complacent is one of the worst things you can do. Oprah, you believe we're living in an era where people are called to speak up? Reese, for me, one major issue is women's stories and creating opportunities for women to tell their stories, which is why I started my production company, Pacific Standard. We cannot expect change in our society if we see only the same movies by the same 20 male directors. It's been my mission over the past 5 years to create better parts for women and also opportunities for women of color, of different generations, to tell their stories in any capacity. Whether we're taking photographs or doing podcasts, just shine a light on these people. Oprah, why do you think it's important for men to be exposed to more of women's stories through media? Mindy, women are half the world, but we've spent so long seeing the world through the lens of men that we're normalized that point of view. For instance, it's completely socially acceptable for a man to not want to see a movie or TV show with a female lead because they're, quote, not into that kind of thing, end of quote. But the opposite is almost never true. Oprah, the external pressure can be overwhelming. I've been in many boardrooms where I was the only woman, the only person of color. There's a wonderful poem by Maya Angelou where she says, I come as one, but I stand as 10,000. Before I'd walk into those rooms, I'd say that line to myself because I feel the presence, the energy. There's a whole pack behind me. What's the most difficult decision you've had to make to fulfill your destiny? Reese, for me, probably leaving an abusive relationship. Oprah, what caused the decision? Reese, psychological, verbal, yeah, those kinds of abuses. I drew a line in the sand and it got crossed and my brain just switched. I couldn't go any further. I was really young and it was profound. It changed who I was on a cellular level, the fact that I stood up for myself. It's part of the reason I can stand up and say, yes, I'm ambitious, because someone tried to take that away from me. Mindy, ultimately, people can only have agency if they have financial freedom. For me, bravery starts with having a nest egg. Reese, I'm completely floored by the universe, and I keep saying, okay, I'm listening. I see what you're doing with me. Oprah, the universe, God, the forces of life, they don't make any mistakes. The work you've been doing your entire lives has prepared you for this very moment. So let's do it. We've run out of time. This is Susan Dellinger reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Catch the podcast of this program at TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.